Seems a little bit strange that I should be speaking tonight on Sisterhood Shabbat, so I decided I won't. I'll have you speak. By which I mean I want to ask a question and have a small conversation surrounding the question as to what is civil disobedience, and we'll bring that question back to our parsha. But I put it out to you, what's civil disobedience? Spending a night at the Concord Jail for not paying your taxes. We're referring to Henry David Thoreau in the great essay on civil disobedience and the source, as far as I know, of the phrase civil disobedience in English. We may come back to Thoreau, okay? So the willingness maybe to go to jail or put yourself on the line. Wonderful.
So I was thinking that if a law is unjust, then the moral thing to do is to object to or to not.
Okay, so if a law is unjust, perhaps civil disobedience is just not following that law. Wonderful. So, Marcia. Not following the law in a peaceful manner. Perhaps civil disobedience requires some level of pacifism even in the action. Okay.
You know, if it's we're trying to help Muslims, we all wear a hijab. If we're trying to protect Jews, we all wear a star. You know, I mean, we all are that person or we're that group.
So is that a technique or is that civil disobedience itself?
It's a technique, but it is a form of civil disobedience, I think.
Okay. Other takes. Okay, so I think what we're going is the Dutch in World War II and the yellow stars confuse the identity so that the group that is to be persecuted can no longer be known. Wonderful.
I don't need this, Ed.
What interests me is the word civil.
All right. What do you mean by that? Civil, right. Yes. So civility, if civility is part of civil disobedience, how do we go about making it in that way? I'll take maybe one or two others, and then we'll...
Well, I think disobedience is an important word, too, because it means either not obeying a law. It means either not obeying a law or actively disobeying a law that is unjust.
Okay, so there is some element of actual disobedience against unjust laws, which we heard. Joni.
I was trying to remember during the Vietnam time if we talked about... I was trying to remember from the Vietnam era whether we talked about not paying our taxes and putting them in a trust or something like that. I've just been thinking about that because I don't want to pay for any wall, etc.
Well, we know Mexico's paying for it, but let's not get distracted here. So I want to bring out two different takes on civil disobedience, and then I want us to look at Shifra and Pua, the two midwives in this story. So the first goes back indeed to Henry David Thoreau and on civil disobedience. And what's fascinating about Thoreau is that he sounds like a libertarian or someone on the far right end of the American political spectrum, because he argues that all government, by definition, is immoral, bad, and at the best, it's inexpedient. And so resisting government overall is already a bit of a moral good. That means that he is for small government. He actually has a phrase, he was not his, but he reuses it, more or less, the best government is the smallest government, more or less. Huh? And well, okay, but this is Henry David Thoreau's position. So government itself is only temporary, and democracy is only supposed to be a stepping stone to some phase where the individual, it's almost an anarchist notion, where individuals can properly regulate ourselves and not interfere with others so that everyone has freedom. So civil disobedience, therefore, is any sort of resistance to government, and that's sufficient. But Thoreau actually says that staying in jail is the, in a given that society and governments are unjust, the just person will be in jail, and thus his time in there. So that's a very interesting and rather powerful a type of notion of civil disobedience, which many of us probably would struggle with, right? If you think the government has a role and some good, you're going to have to negotiate that with Henry David Thoreau to some degree. Perhaps more recent, Martin Luther King provided four steps that are necessary for civil disobedience. And the first is that we actually inform ourselves, which, as my wife likes to say, is not such an easy thing to do. You got to know the facts, whatever facts are. You've got to know and understand the issue to be informed, else how will you even know? The next thing, and now we're sort of speaking more about Moses, I think, than the midwives, you've got to try to negotiate and arbitrate with the people in power, with the government. So that has to be an attempt at dialogue, at communication, in some way suing for your cause in the halls of power. The third step is, and this is interesting, and I wish I knew more what Martin Luther King actually meant by this, self-purification. And while I can't say with authority what MLK Jr. meant, for me it certainly means that if we are taking action without doing so from a place of love for everyone and a sense of trying to understand other people's perspectives, this is my take on it, then we failed in it and we actually are not involved in civil disobedience. And then the fourth step, which is I think the one that we most know and came up the most, is direct action. You got to do something after all that, but there are steps. So now we have the very interesting case of Shifra and Puah, the two midwives, two of the rare named female heroines in the Bible, who Pharaoh commands to kill the Jewish male children. And they, on one way, it looks like they resist, and on another, they might not meet our definition. Because they don't tell Pharaoh that what you're asking us to do is wrong. There's no sense of being informed. They don't directly tell him we can't do this. Instead, what they say is that, you know, the Jewish women aren't like other women, and the babies aren't like other babies. They're very lively, but the Hebrew for lively is chayot. They're animals. And so what the midwives have actually done, and I owe this insight to a colleague, David Seidenberg, is they have co-opted the language of hatred, the language where you other someone and remove their humanity in order to save the lives of some infants. And it's fascinating because there's no direct action. There's a direct action, but there's no confrontation. There's no attempt to raise up Pharaoh. And it is, in the end, a movement that lacks legs. Nothing changes in Egypt because of the midwives. I mean, Moshe is born, so something changes. A salvation is birthed. But they themselves are not engaged in any of those forms of direct action, and yet they did something that was a type of civil disobedience. Moses, if we think about later in the story, will indeed get informed, will go back and forth in direct communication with Pharaoh, will purify himself. I am not worthy. Who am I to do this? Till he is able to do it, and then he engages in direct action. But the midwives, I think, are a much more realistic picture for lots of us, of the difficulty of taking action in the world. And the difficulty of taking action when you're facing a tyrant such as Pharaoh was. They took action of a sort, but it's a very interesting model that should leave us both heartened by their bravery and also questioning whether what they did is sufficient. So I'll leave you with that question in times where it is always difficult to ascertain what is the proper course of action, what is the nature of our world, are governments by nature all bad, do they require resistance, or do we do it surreptitiously as a stratagem? Difficult questions that I think speak to many of us in this time. Shabbat shalom.